When we moved in, it was still cavernous. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And we looked at each other and said, like, what did we do?
In 2022, the average home size in America was just over 2,200 square feet. Now, most McMansions are in the ballpark of around 3,000 to 5,000 square feet. Now, imagine living in a house four times as big.
It's approximately 24,000 total, 18,500 under air.
That's the size of the house of today's guest. We're going to call him Hank. Now, personally, when I think living in a house that big, I can only think of one thing, maintenance.
It's too much. It's too much.
And even with a ton of staff helping you out and running things, with a house that size, you're basically running a commercial property. But on the other hand,
I have a tennis court with a basketball court, movie theater, manicure, pedicure room, 8 garages, and a guest house with 2 bedrooms.
And that's not all. But is it worth it? And if it is, for who? Spoiler alert, as it turns out, according to Hank, your stage of life matters. Hank's going to tell us how he wound up living in a 24,000 square foot home, how much it costs in terms of both time and money, and if he actually likes it. Hey everyone, I'm Sam Parr and this is MoneyWise. There's a ton of podcasts out there that teach you how to make money, but none that really teach you how to handle the life changes that wealth brings. The reason I know this is I'm co-founder of a company called Hampton. We're a community of business owners, CEOs, startup founders. And because of Hampton, I'm able to see behind the scenes information and conversations that people who have a bunch of money have. And that community is what inspired this podcast. With MoneyWise, I want to be able to have conversations with high income, high net worth people and figure out how they spend their money, how they don't spend their money, how they save, how they invest, what makes them happy, the types of conversations that are rarely ever had publicly. And with these conversations on MoneyWise, we're going to be radically transparent about the numbers while we do it. All right, so in today's episode, I talked to a guy named Hank. Hank owns a home that is roughly 24,000 square feet. That is huge. That is a mansion anywhere you live in the world. It's a massive house. And the reason why I wanted to talk to him is because I live in a relatively small home, about 2,000 square feet. When I had a little bit of success in my career and started having a family, I began thinking, what would it be like to have a huge home? And so I thought, I'm going to go find someone who has the biggest house I could think of, and that's Hank. And I wanted to ask him, how much did this home cost to buy? How did he finance it? How did he make his money? Is living in a home like this worth it? Is it awesome? What stinks about it? I wanted to ask him all of the questions about living in a massive, massive house so I can maybe figure out, is this right for me? Do I actually want to do this? And I think a lot of you will have similar questions. Is living in such a huge home worth it? Now, before we start, I want to ask you a question. Do you think you'd enjoy living in a 24,000 square foot house? I want you to think about your answer now. Just keep it in your head. And at the end of the episode, after we learn everything that we've learned, I'm going to ask you this question again. And I'm curious if your answer will change. Now, let's start where we always do, finding out what the hell Hank has done with his life to be able to afford a 24,000 square foot house. Hank made his money in tech, but likely not the tech that comes into mind when I say that.
I actually started in the 80s, 81, 82, kind of in the electronics business, little parts, batteries, video bags, all kinds of electronics. And then that migrated into VCRs and other battery packs and products like that. I was making a living barely. And then I got involved in paging.
Like a pager?
Yeah, which was my answer to the first cell phone, I guess.
Yes, so for context, Hank is in his 70s. So he's been at this for a while. That business continued to evolve and it ended up being a very large operation, mostly distributing cell phones.
When I announced that I was looking to go public, all my competitors came out of the woodwork and said, well, wait, don't do that. Let us team up with you. So I started getting offers. I said, hey, this is great. I turned down a few of them, which in retrospect, people thought I was crazy, but I ended up merging with my biggest competitor. And the two of those companies together was kind of like 1 + 1 = 3, because we became very large. I brought my lines that I had been entrusted to carry his lines, and we probably became the largest or the second largest distributor.
And how big was the business in terms of sales and profit?
Well, so our first year together, I'm going to say we did maybe $500 million, make $500 million, $600 million. By the time I exited a year and a half later, 2 years later, I stepped down. I think we were around $3 billion in sales.
So huge.
Yeah, bigger than I ever imagined, that's for sure. Yeah.
Then in 1996, Hank exited the company and he made around $60 million. But Hank didn't just get tens of millions of dollars and immediately buy a massive house. Like a video game, he started working his way through the levels. First, his starter home.
My first house was a little townhouse.
Then the regular old McMansion.
My second house when I was married, you know, that I was shaking when I signed the agreement, it was like a 3,600 square foot, which to me was like, oh my God, we ran from room to room. It was like, wow, this is a castle.
Then there was his first custom build.
My first house that I built was 11,000 square feet, which also was ridiculously huge to me and beautiful, but in a small lot.
And after that, I guess you could say he downsized. I mean, technically he did.
I ended up moving on to a different home in a country club myself. Unfortunately, I separated from my wife at the time. That house was like 8,500 square foot.
And then he leveled back up. It was after that house that Hank, with his now fiance, decided to build his current house.
No way did I ever plan to build a house this big. No way. I never even thought about it. I said, look, I don't want to talk about size. I don't want to say, I'm going to build this and we'll fit into it. What I said is, what do we want in a home? What rooms do we want? What's important? What have I always fantasized about having in my once-in-a-lifetime house? And it kind of grew. Oh, you want a manicure pedicure room? You want a movie theater? You want this? You want that? I said, sure, sign me up. It sounds good.
So the process didn't start out with Hank saying, you know what? I want to own a house the size of a bowling alley. It really just kind of happened because he said yes to everything he and his fiance wanted, right? I mean, when you have the money to put literally anything you want inside a home, why not just go for it, right?
All of a sudden, the house just started growing. And I said, well, can we shave anything off? And we did like most people did. We looked around, tried to find this house didn't have this, and this house didn't have that, and this house didn't have enough ground. So ultimately, if you have the time and the ability and the patience, because it takes a couple of years to build a house this size, you really end up getting what you want or most of what you want. You still move in and say, oh, I wish I would have put this in. I mean, there's houses in here that have bowling alleys and this and that. I didn't need that. But it's cool. It sounds cool. So we put in what we thought was right. And when we moved in, it was still cavernous. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And we looked at each other and said, like, what did we do? I felt like I was, you know, like we needed a tram to get from one side, but you grow into it.
We're going to get to the pros and cons shortly, but let's talk about the thing that you guys love about MoneyWise. Let's talk about the money. How much did Hank actually pay? First, the price for the lot itself.
To me, it was just shy of $1 million for a 3-acre lot, which in Florida, in this area, is considered a buy. When the initial plans came out, this development did not sell at all. It was out in the middle of nowhere. Nothing was built around it. None of the homes were built. It was just like out in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, make a long story short, I was able to buy the ground relatively inexpensively compared to what it would cost today. The lots alone are half of what my house costs now.
And then there was the build cost.
The cost to build the house without furnishing was about $8 million, $8.5 million with the ground, with furnishing maybe $10 million.
That's how much Hank paid around 10 years ago. Obviously, time and location mean a lot when it comes to housing costs, and real estate prices have gone up, so you have to take inflation into account. Now, if we simplify this a little bit and we look at Zillow, that price, $10 million, that's going to get you around 4,000 to 5,000 square foot in the form of a townhome in Manhattan.
Hey, I'm walking here. Get out of here.
And then in other states, you're going to be able to buy the most expensive home. I'm from Missouri. I don't think there is a home for sale for $10 million. And if it is, it's something like 250 acres or some huge ranch or something epic like that. On the other hand, it'll get you about 12,000 square feet and 2.5 acres in Oklahoma and the nicest property around. So for this episode, we spoke to Nashville-based architect Ryan Tavis.
I work on primarily private residences. Mostly what I focus on are kind of high performance and high design houses.
We asked him what the cost to build a custom home in his area would be if you were to do it right now, today.
Well, I was just having this conversation with a builder last week. I mean, we were $600-$700 a square foot.
So doing some math, let's say you were building a 15,000 square foot house. That would come to around $10.5 million. Now, building and buying are two separate beasts. You could just buy a move-in ready home and skip the hassle of a years-long project. But if you're making a purchase this big and something that you're going to live in for decades, you're going to want this to be exactly the way you want it, just like Hank. And of course, Ryan's a bit biased given his business. He makes a fair point about why you should be patient and go through a builder.
They're coming in with specific wants and needs. If you bought something, I feel like they would just be constantly altering it or trying to mold it into the shape of what they really are looking for.
Of course, it doesn't end with just the buying and building costs. With any home, you're going to have a lot of ongoing expenses, maintenance, fees, things like that. And in a moment, we're going to get to a rapid fire of what those are for Hank. But before we do that, we've got to talk mortgage. More specifically, why Hank did not get one.
When we say I paid cash for it, it sounds like, oh, you know, whatever. It was, I did not have it in my back wallet, of course. There, it's just a question of the value of money, what you can make on your money versus what you have to pay for a mortgage. At the time, it was a simple equation. It wasn't that I didn't care about having a mortgage. I had a mortgage on my very first house back in Philadelphia, the 3,600 square foot mansion that I thought it was at the time, because mortgage rates were low. But as the mortgage rates went higher, it's just a question of what your money can do if you don't put it into the house. So at the time, I think I just remember making the choice that I was better tying it up in real estate than perhaps keeping it invested. So that it wasn't that I just said I didn't care. I actually evaluated the value of the money.
What do you think is like a good ballpark for what percentage of your net worth should be in your primary residence? Like when you were doing the math, were you like, I'm okay with 20%?
I mean, I guess in my case, it's, you know, it was, you know, maybe 5% or 8% of my net worth. I can retroactively plug that number in. I didn't think about it at the time. And don't forget, there's two people with two different piles of money paying for it. So a couple together, it's their joint money that's spending it. So it's a different calculation for me. You know, not to throw people off and confuse them, but it was just a different calculation for me. I would not, let's put it this way, I would not be living in a house this size for me and my grown children. No way would I buy a house this size.
All right, as promised, let's talk about some of his ongoing expenses for owning this huge, huge house.
I have all kinds of creative ways to make myself feel good about the money I'm wasting, or spending, I should say.
We'll start with landscaping. For context, Hank has around 3 acres.
I think I pay $1,900 a month, almost $1,950, $2,000 a month.
And then utilities, which would be heating, cooling, so electricity and water and trash. Do you know what that would be?
Trash is included in our taxes here. So electricity is probably around anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000 a month.
That's not bad.
Depending on which light bulb is left on. And then there's a gas bill that goes with that. Some of the,
what would gas be?
Gas about $400, $500 a month.
And then there's repairs, which can add up a lot.
Yeah, maybe $50,000, $60,000 a year. I mean, the pool, because everything is $5,000, $6,000. You know, patch a pool, it's $5,000. Find a leak, it's $1,000. So it does add up.
And then you probably have a pool cleaning service. What do they charge per month?
They're about $400 and some a month. And they come once a week.
These costs actually aren't that crazy, I think.
They're not.
That's not that crazy for how big it is. But I'm shocked that what I would think what would happen is a vendor would come to your neighborhood and be like, whatever our normal rate is, just multiply that by 2.
Right. It's just like when you're walking to buy a car. You don't say, give me a car, whatever cost, I trust you. You do a little research. So by me learning more about it, it's very similar to running a business. You know, you can be the head of a company, but it's good that you know what everybody's job description is so you understand what they're doing or not doing. Otherwise, you have no idea and there's no check and balance. So I'm the check and balance just as much, if not more, than the person actually does the fixing.
All that adds up to around $10,000 a month. But what does this kind of money actually get you? If you're going to have a 24,000 square foot house, you better fill it up with a bunch of cool stuff.
It's approximately 24,000 total, 18,500 under air, because there's living space and then there's additional. And when your house is built on a decent sized property, which this is, it's about 3 acres, you have the ability to build all kinds of loggias and different things like that. So they count that in total space. The 18,500 would be air conditioned. Let's say it'd be air conditioned space. Let's talk about it that way. It makes it simpler to understand. But the total includes garages and outside space and all that.
So it's 9 bedrooms.
Well, yeah, it's 7 in the main house and then a guest house with 2 bedrooms, a separate guest house.
And then how many living rooms, how many kitchens, and then what other rooms are there? I think, did you say you had a mani-pedi room?
Well, I don't. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you. But
the home does, though.
The home does, though. And I've passed through it a couple of times.
So what are the other rooms?
So, yeah, so that, and that's a small room. It's not like a huge commercial place or anything. It's, you know, sink, manicure, pedicure. I don't even know how that stuff works half the time, but it was used. And my mom lived with us for a while, so it was easier for her. She couldn't get out to go to the thing. So I always have to rationalize everything that I put in here for you because I sometimes embarrassed about it. But, and then, you know, we have a movie theater, which is kind of 101, you know, in a big house. I guess there's certain things that we have an elevator. Now, putting an elevator in a one-story house would not be a good idea. But this, you know, we have a couple stories here, and we've used it. You know, the kids, they hurt their legs. They do this. They have luggage and they bang up the walls. So there are certain things that just go with a larger house, that, which add expenses. And would be very hard to resell a house this size without an elevator. Not that people may never use it. They may use it. Whatever, it has a movie theater, elevator, a very big family room for entertaining that we designed specifically for that reason because we had parties or whatever, which we used to use quite a bit years ago.
You have an office?
Office that I'm in now, my own office.
And then there's probably another office for your partner, I think you said.
She has it on the side of her bedroom, yes. It's a snore room / office. These are all things we designed prior because even in the best of situations, people, you know, get out of here. I can't stand this. And you're sick, you're coughing, whatever. Go into your little cubbyhole there or whatever. It's where you get sent when you're bad.
And then a pool. No basketball court or tennis court?
I do. I have a tennis court with a basketball court. Yes. They call it a sports court. And getting a lot of pressure, which I could care less, to do a pickleball court and retrofit it, which I haven't succumbed to yet.
Your friends, coworkers, the news, celebrities, everybody is talking about the fastest growing sport, pickleball. Now it's time for you to join the fun.
And then how many car garage?
8 garages. And some additional parking for help, you know, that would come to help us out.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It's funny. For some reason, I think Hank felt a little embarrassed listing off all the rooms. And so those are actually just the things that he was willing to admit. But when you've got a lot of money to spend like he does, pretty much anything you want in a living space can be a reality. As an architect, Ryan gets to make loads of those dreams come true.
Usually I'm attracting unique people with unique skill sets. One that we've done has a client that's kind of a celebrity chef. So we're just designing a crazy kitchen with a pantry that's so huge and different storage options and stuff, freezers, stuff like that. It really depends on the client. Yeah, I mean, we had one that was going to be a pretty large house. Unfortunately, the design I did didn't get built, but I mean, he was putting a giant pool with a lazy river and almost like a resort. Had a meeting last week with a guy that we're kind of close to town, but still far out, and he wants a helicopter pad.
Now, this one's the best. Perhaps the coolest request is also the most common one.
Secret tunnel! Secret tunnel!
People love hidden doors, people love passageways, people love stuff like that, and kids do too. You know, everybody always wants a secret passage or a secret room.
We can all drool at the costs and features of these mansions, but the real question, the question that this whole podcast is about, the question I am trying to answer for myself, is it actually worth it? Aside from getting all these cool, fancy features, what is really the purpose of having such a big space? For most of Ryan's clients, it's...
Grandkids. It's grandkids. They're at the age where they have kids... that have kids. So they're grandparents and they want to make a cool place for their grandkids to come hang out with them. Ensuite bathrooms, own rooms, maybe their own private areas, like as far as like a little lounge area or living room with a bar. If they want to make them as comfortable as possible so that they come visit is kind of what I'm reading into it.
And this is exactly what Hank did. Though it didn't exactly work out the way he thought it would.
The only thing that didn't happen is my children are a little bit older, and I thought the guest house they would be using more, but they go off on their own. They all have their own apartments or houses or whatever. So we use it. We use it for, you know, people visiting, people we don't know that become our relatives, whatever, that want to come to Florida in the winter.
But say you're not a grandparent and your kids are still young. Is a 24,000 square foot house with all of its crazy features, is that really good for raising children? My opinion, no, it is not. And I'm going to explain why. I've talked to a lot of wealthy people through this podcast and the rest of my career. The most obvious thing, and this frankly scares me, is when you raise your kids in a fancy environment, I'm incredibly scared of them becoming spoiled and getting used to all this expensive, nice stuff and making them soft, rotten, and just bad people. And I know a ton of kids that were raised in a wealthy family and they turned out just fine. So this is not a rule. I'm just saying it definitely does scare me about raising kids in such a big, fancy house and how it might impact them and how they're going to be adults in their 20s and 30s and be able to relate to average people and not be spoiled and be emotionally stable and healthy. And in fact, on MoneyWise, we're going to do a whole episode on parenting, how to raise kids when you're wealthy. But then there's this other reason. And this is actually something I didn't realize until one of my friends, Neil Patel, who came on episode 2 on MoneyWise, he talked about actually like the logistics of having a huge home and how you actually don't see your kids a lot if you have such a big house.
And then we rented a house here that was 10,800 square feet. Now we're down to 3,000 square feet. I see my kids a lot. Like, no joke, they're around everywhere. They're in our space. There is no office or anything like that. But we interact with them on a daily basis for many more hours than we did in a 10,800 square foot house. My wife and I love it. We're closer as a family.
Back in our first episode, which you guys should absolutely listen to, there's a guy named Michael. Michael owns a law firm, and his personal income each year is something like $15 million. He had very similar thoughts to Neil about how big his house should be.
I bought my house for a little over $1 million, 1.1 million. So 3,400 square feet.
Not big. Not big or small. Medium.
It's perfect. I have two kids. There's enough space for them to run around. I don't have like crazy heating and cooling issues. Like, it's easy to clean. Like, with my OCD, I like things clean and organized. So it's like the perfect happy medium. But like, if you gave me like a 7,000 square foot house, I don't think it would increase my joy.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
So the answer to who would enjoy this kind of house is leaning towards older retirement age people. People with grandkids and people with a lot of time on their hands because these things take a ton of work. Which leads us to a huge potential downside if you're not someone with time on their hands. We talked about the monetary expenses a lot. But there's a massive thing to consider here, something that is not money. In fact, it's more expensive than money, and that's time. How much time running a house like this can actually cost you? Hank keeps comparing it to running a business, which is pretty funny. I mean, parts of his property even fall into commercial upkeep.
The piping is commercial. We have a commercial water meter. We have a commercial this house has gas as well as electric.
How much time per week are you spending or per month making sure everything's taken care of?
I mean, it depends. It's whether it's hiring contractors, evaluating their proposals, and trying to oversee what they're doing. I probably spend 10 hours a week doing it, maybe 5 to 10 hours a week.
So like a part-time job.
It's a part-time job. And I think it makes a difference. I'm not trying to micromanage as much as I'm trying to learn what I can do and what somebody else can do. So I guess the fact is I don't mind doing it. I don't need to hire somebody to screw in a light bulb.
And you're semi-retired.
Yeah, right. I mean, I do need somebody to change a light bulb. However, that is 25 or 30 feet high in a high ceiling. And that's a dilemma we're facing now. These are LED lights and we're saying you have to get a structure to stand on just like they do when they're painting and stuff.
Like scaffolding.
Yes, just changing a light bulb in a high ceiling house becomes an issue.
But look, even though it is a ton of work for Hank, that's actually one of the reasons why he likes it.
that's where a lot of my business, and I think we joked about it a little bit after I did retire at an early age, I just did not know what to do with myself. I was like walking around in circles. It would be great to be able to be a different person privately than you are in business. It's really hard to separate the two.
As he gets a little bit older, that's not so much the case.
Well, I think in the beginning we used to, when her kids were younger and we had a lot of parties and we had a famous Halloween party every year that, you know, and I had a lot of fun with it. And then it became very like, every time I tried to get out the door, it's like, can you just fix this? So I have a to-do list of things that, whether I call somebody or not, it's a list. I'm getting to the point now where I would like not to have to worry about it as much. I mean, obviously I don't cut my lawn, I don't do the gardening, but I still have to make sure that they're doing it and a tree dies and this. There's something always happening that causes me, because I've taken on this responsibility for some crazy reason, to do it.
Then again, he doesn't necessarily have to take that all on.
And a lot of people in this neighborhood have a house manager. I can tell you this, I'm the only guy that I believe washes and waxes my own cars in the neighborhood, to the point where people have driven by and say, hey, what days are you in the neighborhood? And I said, pretty much every day.
If Hank was younger, he said he'd likely have someone else do those things.
It's a calculation, and I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but it's me saying, what is my time worth versus working and making money versus the people I'm hiring? Different equation than now that I'm not working. Now it's my justification for my not working. If I'm not working, I better do something to save money.
But maybe you're not retired. Maybe you are planning on hiring someone to do all that work, though there will always be work to do. And maybe you don't have kids or grandkids to fill that space. There's one simple thing that it can come down to.
You know, you have a subset of people that just want privacy. We have musicians, we have football players, you know, because they're in the limelight so much. So this neighborhood is specifically, and everybody has their own amenities. Most people have a tennis court, they have a pool. This is more for people that say, look, this is where I want my life at this time in my life to center around. It just, this is where somebody wants privacy.
And I get that. I think being wealthy is awesome. But being famous, that is not awesome. I do not think that would be fun. So if you have the money to put everything you need or want in a private place, it makes a lot of sense. Now, we've talked about age. And for the most part, the consensus has been, if you're a young working parent, the house may be too big. 24,000 feet, that's a lot for someone with a full-time job. Hank aged into having a house that size, but now he's aging out of it.
Is this going to be your last house? Is this going to be your place that you're going to live forever?
No, I don't think so. Because I won't last forever if I keep it with all the work that has to be done. So I'd like to last longer because I like the car stuff and the garages and stuff. So again, that's a quandary because when you start to think about moving, certainly not ready to go into a retirement home yet. I've got to think there's going to be another place prior to that, I hope.
Has it been worth it? Are you happy that you went this big?
I would absolutely say in retrospect that for the years we've been here, we got a lot of use out of this house because we built it for the things that we would use, our lifestyle. So in my case, yes, I'm happy because, you know, I didn't have to go out to join all these private clubs and stuff like that and do all these things. So, you know, we spent more, but it really became a centerpiece to entertaining and family and things like that. So, yeah, I'm happy. Would I have done it probably on my own? Probably not. You know, as an individual, even with my kids, that was the house I lived in that was 8,500 and they were fine with that. I was fine with that. In fact, they still tell me they miss it to this day.
Now, this is actually a cool part. I was also curious to get Ryan's perspective as a builder. Would he himself live in a 24,000 square foot house?
I don't think I would. I'm a pretty conservative, frugal person to begin with. So I feel like I could spend that money somewhere else and having that much space wouldn't necessarily equate to happiness for me. But honestly, if I had a big family with a lot of grandkids, that you interview me in 10 years, 15 years, that answer might be different.
So look, I'm young. I'm in my early 30s. I've got a young family. It's just one kid so far, and hopefully a few more soon. However, 24,000 square feet house, that is not for me. But I could see myself making a 5,000 or 6,000 square foot home work. Anything above that, I just think it's way too much work. And by the way, it's insane to be saying 5,000 or 6,000 as if that's small, but it is compared to Hank. It's a really big home. I think it's manageable, but I think anything larger than that, look, I spend like 2-3 hours a week right now just messing with stuff in my small home now. I do not want more work. Later in life, when I'm older, if I've got grandkids, I can see this being awesome. Maybe. If you are considering buying a big house or trying to figure out what size house you want, here's a few tips that I have for you. In my opinion, if you're going to invest this much time and money into a home, something that you're going to be in for many decades and you could afford it, I think you should make sure every detail is thought through and you are getting exactly what you want. Before this podcast, I thought I just wanted to buy a home that was already built, but Hank actually kind of convinced me that building might be a good idea. Brian did tell us, though, that leaving space for compromise is part of the process.
Once they see it on paper, once they see a model or what it kind of looks like, they'll sometimes back off of it a little bit and be like, all right, yeah, this is, we might not need this much space. You know, like one we did a few years ago, it ended up being 15 or 16,000 square feet. Once we kind of went through that whole process, he's like, yeah, I don't know that we really need this, that, and these spaces. We kind of backed it down to maybe 12 or 13.
However, there's a balance here. Hank says that he's glad that he found someone on the other side pushing him to really go for it.
If we go back to my comments about running a business at very low margins, I didn't have room for a lot of error. Unfortunately, I might have taken a little bit of the fun out by looking at everything. Do we really need this? Do we really need that? Do we really have to have marble floors? And by the way, in retrospect, the house came out beautiful. So I don't regret any of it now. But I think just my mental, thing was, what do I need versus what do I want? What's going to matter? And I do think of the resale, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, I did think of the resale value. And it's no different than any other product you buy. You know, if you buy a car and you get every belt, you're never going to get credit for it when you trade it in. A house is a little different. And especially a house in this neighborhood where the people that are buying now, the money isn't any object to them, it seems. And they do want all the bells and whistles. So I'm not sorry that I did it, but if you ask me, did I agonize over some things? I did. And my partner who built the house was also very cautious. He wasn't like, oh, just do the best of this, the best of that. He would say, look, don't waste your money on this. So yeah, that went into it on my end. And then I had a check and balance on the other end saying, don't be cheap. You know, you want to enjoy your house, stop thinking about it like that way. She ended up winning, I think. But in retrospect, I'm super happy that I did it.
And that takes me to the next piece of advice, which is you should be really intentional about your money. I call this conscious money. I stole it from my friend Ramit. And that basically means to be really thoughtful about what makes you happy and to spend more money on that and to not just mindlessly spend.
It's really cool to see somebody that's kind of concerned where their money's going and not just throwing money at things and being like, okay, is there a better way or cheaper way to do this?
This episode has actually inspired me to be very specific about the type of house that I want and to map it out and to literally just write it down. Talk to my wife, say, we want a room that looks like this, that does this. We want this many rooms. We want our kitchen to feel like this, and to map out how much that might cost and if we actually want it, and truly close our eyes and imagine that we're there waking up in the morning, going to bed at night. What do we do throughout the day? And to be actually super thoughtful about the space. The reason being is if I'm going to spend this much money and this much effort on a space, I actually want it to be perfect. I want it to be just like I want it to be. And I think surrounding myself in a space that I live in and that I'm in at every day, I actually think it impacts my mood. It impacts how I work. I think it impacts how if I'm happy. I actually think that my physical surroundings does have a massive impact on my happiness and my mood. And lastly, 24,000 square feet is huge. Even 10,000 is massive. So unless your passion is interior design, save yourself some stress and time and just go ahead and hire a designer.
I had to kind of leave my Philly boy attitude behind and realize that if I'm going to build a house like this, I can't be putting stuff in from, I don't want to mention names, but I can't be putting furniture together. we had a decorator who was extremely helpful. And we definitely needed a decorator because a lot of people who believe they're artistic, and even I thought myself, okay, I'm artistic, whatever. But you really need to help because the mistakes end up costing more than you would have spent originally. And when in a house this big, to be able to envision how it's going to lay out is very difficult because everything's so big.
And so I asked you at the very beginning of this episode, do you want to live in a 24,000 square foot house? I had you think of what the answer was before. Now, knowing what you know, I want to know, has your answer changed? I'm curious if we swayed you one way or the other. So if you're listening to this on Spotify or iTunes, leave a review and put it in the comments if your opinion did change. Or if you're on Twitter, let me know. TheSamPar is my handle. And tell me, what size home do you want? Did this change your opinion on anything? And I want to actually hear what's your dream home and actually share photos with me because, you know, I like to be inspired. And so, my friend, that's it. That's this episode of MoneyWise. And by the way, if you liked this conversation, you guys should check out Hampton. That's my company. It's joinhampton.com. Hampton is a community with founders, CEOs, people who own companies. The average size company is around 20 to 30 million in revenue, but we've got companies from two all the way up to hundreds of millions of dollars in sales. And we have conversations like this all day. We have conversations about money. We have conversations about business. We have conversations about things that you can't Google. They only happen behind closed doors. I personally review and vet everyone who applies, giving them the thumbs up or thumbs down, because we want this community to be perfect, where you can have these safe conversations that are somewhat embarrassing to have, but they're really important for people who are in this category. So check it out. And finally, I've said on this podcast so many times that this podcast takes a ton of work. I'm not the one doing all of the work. You see, I've hired this company called Lower Street. You can check them out, lowerstreet.co/moneywise. They've helped me produce this podcast. My partner in crime here is Jackie. She helped me find guests. She helped me write the podcast, all the editing you hear. It's been incredibly easy for me. So check them out if you want a podcast, lowerstreet.co/moneywise.